Well, welcome back to the next session of the class on Ecclesiastes, Searching for the Meaning of Life. We're going to continue on in chapter 2, and we're going to pick up things where we left off, beginning in verse 18. So Solomon had just come to this conclusion that all of his effort at pursuing pleasure through wine, through luxury, through construction, through wealth, and things, and women, and all this led him to the conclusion that none of it truly actually satisfied the question of the meaning of life. And so he despaired over that, and then considered whether living wisely as he did was better than madness and foolishness. And he ultimately concluded that the fate of both of them are the same. Everybody dies, so living wisely and living foolishly doesn't get you anything in the end. So all of that was puzzling to him and was considered something of hurting the wind, just meaningless, pointless. Continuing on from there here in verse 18, he said, "And so I hated all my labor." Previously, Solomon said that he had hated life because of just how vexing it was that he wasn't able to achieve an answer to the question that he was seeking. And now he says, "I hated my labor. I hated all my labor that I labored at under the sun." Why? "Because I must leave it to the man who comes after me." So he hates all the work he's done because he doesn't get to keep it. He's got to give it to somebody else. And he doesn't like that. He doesn't understand that. And he's puzzled here. Two reasons. One, he has to give his stuff away at the end of his life. When he dies, it goes to somebody else. And secondly, he doesn't know who it goes to and what they're going to do with it. Verse 19, "And who knows whether that person, he will be a wise man or a fool?" Who knows, he says, if they're going to be wise or foolish. Now, why is that a problem? Well, when you work hard at something and you make something and you invest in something and you care about something, and then if you give it to somebody else, you want to see them also sort of like carry on that sort of attitude toward it. You want them to care about it as well. Perhaps think if you've ever like made anything, for example, like if you've ever started a business, you've ever built a house, and you end up then having to give it away or transfer it over to somebody else. And then you watch them, theoretically, hypothetically, run it into the ground. How does that make you feel? You happy that you just watched your life's work, all the blood, sweat, and tears, just kind of like disintegrate? Nobody likes that. Solomon doesn't like that. He doesn't know why this is the case. Why would he have to do all this labor and then it doesn't get him anything? He has to give it away, and the person he gives it away to has no clue what they're going to do with it. He's frustrated at this. Now, keep in mind that the idea of like a modern day will is really not in the picture in the biblical view here. The way that inheritance worked in ancient Israel was that the eldest son would get a double portion of the inheritance, and then the remainder would get divided among the remaining sons. Women were typically not inheritors in the ancient world. They would participate and receive the blessings of an inheritance through their husband and his family. Now, because Solomon talks about labor here, we can see that he switches back to the idea of work. So there was that sort of like intervening reflection on wisdom and madness and foolishness. Now he's going back to the idea of everything that he worked for in life. So the idea of labor here is what's on his mind, the things that he has done in his life and the significance of them. I think we can all resonate with Solomon's sort of angst here about this situation, about these circumstances, and that if you were in his shoes and having this massive kingdom and empire and just buildings and horses and flocks and servants and all these things, and then you'd want to know where it's going after you're gone. You'd want to know what happens to it. If Solomon were to remain around and watch what happened, and if it got mishandled, handled or mismanaged, I'm sure it would break his heart, just like it would break our heart if what we had put so much time and effort into was not cared for in the way we thought it should be or handled the way we thought it should be. Now, here at the end, second half of verse 19, so he doesn't know whether this person will be a wise man or a fool, yet, regardless of whether he's a wise man or a fool, he will rule over all my labor that I've labored at and in which I've been so wise under the sun. His concern really is about a fool, I think, taking ownership. It's just not about another wise person. He probably would actually appreciate knowing if it was a wise person. But he's really concerned about a fool having ownership of and ruling over all the stuff that he has been so wise for so many years to construct and to bring about. And so and then he comes to his conclusion that it's a pointless thing. It's a pointless thing because you can't control who inherits your stuff. So I turned about. This phrasing here, I turned about, refers to kind of like Solomon changing his attention and his direction of thought. He turned about and he gave his heart over to despair concerning all the labor that I had labored at under the sun. It weighed so heavily on him that he turned his heart over to despair. It's almost like he saw everything that was going on and he had had enough of it. He just turned and walked away in despair. He reflects then further on kind of like throwing an anecdote in this whole section here. So he talks then kind of from a third person perspective. Says, for there is a man, you could also say, I've known a man, but there's a man whose labor is with wisdom. And he could also even be talking kind of reflexively about himself here. We're not sure who the person is that he's addressing here, the man. For there's a man whose labor is with wisdom, with knowledge, and with skill. Those are three really important things. And they describe Solomon. Yet he must leave his portion, this idea, portion, inheritance, must leave his portion to a man who has not labored for it. This also is pointless, and not just pointless. It's a great evil, he says. So it's a problem that somebody's going to get his stuff after he's gone. It's a problem that he doesn't know if it's going to be wise or foolish. And now it's also a problem that they didn't do anything to contribute to it. They're getting all this stuff for free. He's like, this is wrong. He doesn't use the word wrong. He said, this is pointless. Why is he doing all this work if these are the three things that end up happening at the end of his life? So he circles back. Okay, we've gone through all of these different ideas of things that Solomon's been pursuing. And we circle all the way back to the beginning in chapter 1. And he asks the question again, what does a person get from all his labor? He uses a slightly different word in the Hebrew for get, whereas in chapter 1, it's gain. It's what does he profit from? It's the same idea, though. What does a person get from all his labor? If you don't get to take anything with you, if living wisely doesn't really amount to giving you an edge or an advantage over the fool, everybody dies together at the end of their lives. If whatever you make and get, you come into the world with nothing, you leave the world with nothing, it's an equal footing for everybody. There's this injustice. That's really the heart of what Solomon's getting at, is he sees there is an injustice in all of this work that he's done in life and what will end up happening. He even says here that it's a stress of his heart. All the labor is a stress of his heart, that there's a lot involved in everything that he's done. Not an easy task. You know, we're reading about what he's done, but he's like, this is like a telescoped view of decades of his life. And so there's just an enormous amount of effort behind this pursuit of pleasure, wealth, luxury, construction, and women, and all this type of stuff. And looking at, well, does living wisely, did that give me anything? No, not really. And everything else that I have is going to end up going to somebody else who might be a fool and waste it on frivolous things. And then, you know, he didn't do a thing for it. So basically, he's going to profit off of all of my hard work. This is a great evil in his eyes, an injustice. What does he get from all this? From all the stress of life that he's had to endure? He characterizes further this life as days of pain, and that the business of work is frustrating. I mean, when we read all the stuff that Solomon tempted, you guys think there was like a little bit of stress in some of those things? A little bit of oversight? So a little bit of work to make sure those things actually succeeded? I think it's hard to imagine just the extent of effort that he had to exert to achieve everything that he set out to do. So the idea of laboring, and maybe it's not just Solomon. I think all of us can testify that working is hard. Working is called work for a reason. And when your days are filled with work, the days are filled with just activity. And the activity usually comes with either physical pain, emotional pain, mental pain, frustrations. And Solomon even goes so far to say that with everything that I've done, all the pain and the frustration that I've gone through, yes, even at night, he says his heart does not rest. Now, he's talking about this man in third person. Like I said, this is like an anecdote he's throwing in here. Could be himself. He's sort of like using a rhetorical device, perhaps, or could be somebody else that he knows. But certainly he feels the guy's pain with him, because he's describing a very similar situation to what he's experiencing, that even at night, his heart does not rest. It seems that sleeplessness, that Solomon is saying there's this, the sleeplessness that comes with this injustice is also weighing on his mind. And this is also pointless. In the book of Proverbs, in chapter 13, the idea of inheritance comes up where we wonder, like, why does Solomon have such a pessimistic outlook on giving his stuff away to someone else? What about his kids? Would he also think that leaving everything he's built to his son is such a bad thing? Because in Proverbs, it says that a good person, which is another term for somebody who uses wisdom, a good person will provide an inheritance for his children's children. That is what a good person will do. And Solomon is saying that he can't imagine why life works this way, that he has to give away his stuff when he's dead. And he finds this to be pointless. Inheritance seems to be this line of reasoning that he brings up about wisdom is it's in kind of like a little bit of a particular perspective. And we were talking about wisdom earlier in the last session, that it's not godly wisdom necessarily that Solomon's trying to say he's using. So when we're talking about wisdom, we're talking about Proverbs and what it means to live the good life and to follow godly wisdom. That perspective is not always what Solomon is adopting and trying to put forth here. Because surely Solomon would see that there is a good thing involved in all of his labor that he's done that then can benefit his family, either in the present or when he's gone in the future. I mean, this is a basic motivation of parents of all time, that you save up and store up wealth to give to your children so that you can support them and perhaps give them what they don't have and offer them a better future. It seems that Solomon detests this idea that hard-earned wealth would go to someone else undeserving of it. It seems that his perspective about all the pleasures, the wealth, and the luxuries, and everything he worked so hard for that didn't satisfy him, that he's kind of soured about the whole thing. And the thought of them going to someone else is really repulsive, because a person didn't really gain anything from all their years of labor. He didn't gain anything. And so in essence, Solomon is claiming that enjoying pleasure and accumulating wealth, while those don't really offer an answer to the meaning of life, that looking at life through hard work that goes to someone else, he finds that to be beyond appropriate. He wants life to sort of follow a pattern that leads to meaning. And when it doesn't, then he turns on it
and criticizes it. I just want you guys to understand that that's the way Solomon's mindset works. And as we're reading wisdom literature here, we have to keep in mind that the statements and descriptions that are made are not just at face value some sort of like ultimate truth, that Solomon is explaining himself and his quest and his journey and the things that he's observing. And he's giving you his perspective on them. And if we don't think about things in terms of Solomon's perspective, then we might really scratch our heads wondering, well, how is this actually really true? And why is he so bitter about life? Did he not really have much enjoyment? But he says he did. So then what's he upset about? So we just have to keep in mind what Solomon's really trying to convey here. All right. Now that we've had all the negativity of Solomon sort of come out in full force and seems like life just is really rough in his eyes. And what's the point of it all? He says, there's not one. You know, he did everything to only come back around to the beginning and probably should have said, man, I'm dumb. I should have saved myself all that trouble because I didn't get what I wanted from it. I didn't answer the question of all questions. What does a person gain from all his labor? Well, at the end here of this section, Solomon does turn to then talk about labor and kind of like after he's done his investigative work, he sort of like takes his investigator cap off, and then he kind of puts on sort of like what I would call the more like down-to-earth hat. He switches to talk then in terms of work and labor and life, and switches tones entirely. So, verse 24, he says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat, drink, and make his soul enjoy good in his labor. Well, that's the most positive thing he said the whole time. So where did this come from, Solomon? Well, I think he's not using his investigation framework here. He's stepping back from his critical view of life, and I'm trying to answer this ultimate question. And now he's just going to talk about, so does work mean anything at all? Does what you labor for have any meaning? Not ultimate meaning, because that's what he's preoccupied with originally, is does it give any ultimate meaning to life? Well, let's just talk about work and labor and like what it actually can mean. And he uses this language here at the beginning. There's nothing better for a person. This is like a sort of like a formula he uses to introduce the idea of the admission of a fact. It's not that he's giving some sort of absolute here as though this is the best thing in existence. There's nothing better, that there's no higher value than what he's about to say. He's just saying that this is actually a fact for him. He wants to set this forth. So he says there's nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This eating and drinking, it's not like gluttonous eating. It's also not drunkenness. He's just saying enjoying the things of life, enjoying the basic occupations of life, of eating food and drinking beverages, which probably was wine. He sort of has this sort of carpe diem, I think, attitude here of that just to enjoy the moment with what you have from all the hard work that you've done. Eat the food that you've earned. Drink the drink that you've earned. And enjoy the satisfaction, the good that you've done in your labor. I think it's interesting that he follows this up. He says, this I also saw that it is from the hand of God. This is something he says he believes is given to humankind by God. God gives as a gift the enjoyment of one's work. Previously, Solomon had criticized work as something that only produced pain and frustration and restless sleep. Now he flips that paradigm on its head and says that work is actually a true source of satisfaction and something to be enjoyed, and that no one can actually truly learn to enjoy life and what they receive from all their work unless they receive it from God, from the hand of God. That's because God created everything to be enjoyed. And so if somebody's going to enjoy something, then God's the one who's going to give it to you to enjoy. He's going to give you the enjoyment. The ability to enjoy the good things of life is a gift from God. And those who recognize God's rule, God's authority, they, according to Solomon, should have more than others the capacity to enjoy life. In wisdom literature, as we know Ecclesiastes is, there's often a strong view that everything is happening according to God. God is controlling everything that's happening in the world. A lot of time in wisdom literature, they see the world operating in a very mechanistic way, that things don't just happen by chance, that God is working all things in the world in the ways that he wants. And there's a lot of cause and effect relationships that are discussed and presented. I think that's what Solomon's doing here, is he's kind of presenting, and we'll see more of it here at the end of this section. He's presenting this view of what God is doing because he sees God as the source of everything. And so if you're going to receive something in life, then you're going to recognize that God did it. And if you're going to lose something in life, then you're going to recognize that God did it. That's the way that wisdom literature works. And that's here in verse 25, he continues on. So he saw that the ability to eat and drink and enjoy good in labor, this is from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment apart from him? He sees that it's really dependent upon God to enjoy these things. For to the one who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy, these three wonderful things. But on the other hand, to the sinner, he gives the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God. But also, this is also pointless in hurting the wind. Let's make sure we don't forget that point. Because at the end of the day, everything he sees relates to his ultimate, you know, question, the quest he's seeking to answer. Here at the end, after establishing that he sees God kind of orchestrating the enjoyment of material blessings, he turns to address this principle here, that he sees that the one who pleases God, then God gives him wisdom, knowledge, and joy. So on the one hand, you please God, you get something good. You get wisdom, knowledge, and joy. On the other hand, if you're a sinner, meaning like you actually rebel against God, you disobey God, you oppose God, then God gives you basically the task of gathering and collecting wealth. That God tasks you with working hard and gathering and accumulating things for the reason of then giving it to the person who pleases him. So he views this exchange as a divine principle, that the one who opposes God, God assigns him this task of then serving, they're going to inadvertently serve the ones that please God. And this is something actually that we do find in the book of Proverbs as well. The verse that I was talking about previously, that if you, the second half of the verse is that the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. So a good person will provide an inheritance for their children's children, and then the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. So in the book of Proverbs, as the wisdom literature, we see this theme as well of like that God uses things in the world, such as sinful people, to then bless his people. Now, how that really works out, that's really only for God to know and to understand. We don't have knowledge into those details and intricacies of the world, but to just understand that the writers of the wisdom literature, they see it important to understand the way that God blesses those who do what is right. And a lot of wisdom literature is trying to not tell you absolute facts and realities about truth and things like that, but to get you to have a certain way of thinking about life. Usually to say, would you rather do A and be part of group A, or would you rather do B and be part of group B? So if group A receives wisdom, knowledge, and joy because they do what pleases God, and then group B are the people who oppose God, and they basically work their whole life and then lose their wealth and God gives it to the people who please him, which group do you want to be in? The idea, I think, is it's pretty motivational to go to group A because that's where the blessings are. That's where the joy, the wisdom, the knowledge, and everything that brings about the good life. But at the end of it all, at the end of everything, Solomon does come back to his main thesis that everything is pointless. So while we are tasked with working, everybody is tasked with working, if we work and are a person who pleases God, we'll be able to have enjoyment of our work. We'll be able to eat and drink from the benefits and the rewards and the profit that we gain from our work. Even if that doesn't ultimately give us true profit or gain, as Solomon is trying to understand for the meaning of life. But just because the things we do in the day in and day out of our lives, even if those small things don't give us the ultimate meaning, you know, the answer to the ultimate meaning in life, they do mean something. And they mean something to you. They mean something to me. They mean something to our families, to our children, to our friends. And so that's why I think here at the end, even if Solomon might at the end come back around to seeing things in a pretty bleak perspective, I think that we should take away from this that God intends for us to enjoy our work, that we should enjoy, our soul should enjoy the good things that come from working hard, and that God has given these gifts to us and helps us to enjoy life that he has designed and he's given to us. But at the end, really what we do every day, our jobs, how much we make, the food we eat, the stuff we drink, none of it really does matter. None of it ultimately matters. So Solomon is still going to continue on his quest. He has not found the answer to the meaning of life. And so in the next session, we're going to continue in chapter 3. And we're going to talk about the mystery of all the different seasons and times of life. We'll see you next time.